Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa Yakyadi London. For a lot of Native people, prosthetics offer greater mobility after an amputation. They are also a potential path to leaving the wheelchair behind. It's a necessary step toward healing for those who've experienced an injury or disease that claims a limb. But prosthetics are also expensive and often require extensive physical therapy. Coming up this hour, we'll hear why prosthetics are particularly important for Native people. We are back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The tribal organization that serves 42 villages in Alaska's interior has ousted its chief and chairman. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Tanana Chiefs Conference board members recalled PJ Simon following an all-day executive session last week.
Tanana Chiefs Conference board members representing villages did not publicly discuss why PJ Simon was voted out. But Simon was criticized this fall for management decisions, including the firing of longtime organization attorney Natasha Singh. TCC Vice President Charlene Stern presided over the recall vote during the public portion of the meeting, which was live streamed.
The motion is a motion to recall the chief chairman Simon by secret ballot. That's what was motion seconded and questions been called.
Independent auditors tallied the ballots and a required two-thirds majority supported Simon's recall. The board subsequently voted to have Chief Financial Officer Brian Ridley take over leadership of the organization until March, when a permanent replacement for Simon will be selected during TCC's annual convention. A statement from Ridley says his goal is to focus on, quote, healing and rebuilding. Simon's ouster follows a lawsuit filed last month by two villages against four TCC executive board members, including Vice President Stern, but not Simon. The Fairbanks Daily Newsminer reported last month that the suit alleges, quote, financial malfeasance, illegal meetings, and a secret agreement to pay off an unnamed former employee, unquote. A response statement from the TCC Executive Board says the litigation makes false allegations of fiscal irregularities, adding that the suit and social media, quote, attacks are intended to embarrass and intimidate our directors, unquote. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
The St. Croix Chippewa Indians is set to become the second Wisconsin tribe to legally offer sports betting at its casinos. Daniel Kading reports the Northern Wisconsin tribe follows the Oneida Nation, which was the first in the state to offer sports wagering late last month.
Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers and St. Croix Tribal Chairman William Reynolds signed a gaming compact amendment to allow betting on sports and other events. The change is subject to a 45-day review by the U.S. Department of Interior, which is expected to sign off on it. Reynolds says the tribe will offer betting on professional sports at all three of its casinos.
It means a lot to us, you know, not just economically for the tribe itself, but it also helped our tourism, you know, in our counties that our casinos reside in.
Betting on college or high school sports won't be allowed. The tribe is making additions and acquiring kiosks with the hopes of having all equipment in place by the Super Bowl in mid-February. The change would allow people to bet remotely on tribal land, but Reynolds says only in-person betting will be allowed for now. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
The Cherokee Nation is asserting the tribe's treaty right for citizens to hunt and fish on Cherokee land after the state of Oklahoma recently announced it will not renew tribal hunting and fishing compacts. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. signed an executive order Monday asserting its rights. In absence of 2022 compacts, the Cherokee Nation will manage and regulate hunting and fishing on the Cherokee Nation. The existing compact expires December 31st. Tribal compacts were first signed in 2016. According to the Cherokee Nation, compacts have generated millions of dollars for the state for wildlife management, law enforcement, and conservation efforts. Tribes have guaranteed hunting and fishing rights on their lands, but the compacts allowed for expanded hunting and fishing opportunities for tribal citizens throughout the state. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the National Indian Child Welfare Association, dedicated to the well-being of Native children and families. News and information on NICWA, as well as how you can show your support at nicwa.org. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for nearly 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. Losing a limb is a devastating event, but prosthetics offer a path to mobility or at least partial functionality, and there are few studies that specifically focus on Native Americans and prosthetics. But Native Americans top the list when it comes to rates of diabetes, and one of those diseases that are the main causes of limb amputations. Other causes include accidents and diseases like cancer, which also disproportionately affect Native Americans. At the same time, prosthetics are costly and require extensive physical therapy, both of which can be a barrier for some people, especially those who have to travel long distances for medical care. So coming up, we'll hear about the need for prosthetics and how people overcome barriers to utilize the tools available to them to heal. And you can join us too. Do you have a prosthetic limb? And do you have access to the services you need? Give us a call and let us know about it. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now joining us from Flagstaff, Arizona is Mike Kaiser. He's a certified prosthetist and orthotist and the owner of the clinician of Next Step Prosthetics. And he can pronounce his profession way better than I can. So welcome to Native America Calling, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Can you introduce your profession in the correct way for everyone listening?
You're close. It's a prosthetist and orthotist.
And can you tell everyone what that means? What do you do in your job?
Yeah, it's a profession dedicated to just those things. So the prosthetic side of the field is fitting and showing patients how to use their prosthetic limbs after an amputation. Often it's confused with like an internal prosthetic, like hip or something, but we do the external prosthetic legs. And then the orthotic side is anything from like foot orthotics all the way up to those helmets that babies will wear or back braces and those kinds of things.
How did you get into this career field?
So when I was going to school, I knew I wanted to do something medical and just kind of stumbled upon this, found out there was a huge need for it, not enough people we're going into this field and more people required it. And it just sounded really interesting and impactful.
And what's been your favorite part of it so far?
There's been a handful of things I really enjoyed, but getting to know people that I otherwise wouldn't have met has been really cool. And then just also the immediate gratification of someone will come in a wheelchair and they'll leave walking out. And it's just really a rare thing, I think, to see such immediate effects on your work.
Yeah, I mean, you help improve people's daily lives. Must be very fulfilling. So what's the process to receive a prosthesis from someone who needs one?
Currently, it's a lot of the burden is placed on the patient to seek out the care they need, figure out where they need to go to get a prosthetic leg. So I've been trying to bridge that gap and go to patients. I'll go to their homes. I'll drive out on the reservation and meet people so they're not having to find transportation into the next city that has a clinic. The process, though, you would be seen and assessed. So if you're ready for a prosthetic leg, you're you're motivated, you're healed. We would take a cast of your residual limb, and from that cast, we would make a 3D prosthetic, a 3D printed prosthetic, as like a temporary trial leg to walk on. And once that's deemed appropriate and functions and is comfortable, then we turn into a definitive prosthetic.
So 3D printing has really helped with the advancement of this field. Is that true?
Yeah, it's pretty new. It's catching on more and more. There's not too many people that offer the 3D printing side, just because the field is so ingrained in kind of the traditional methods of making things. But the 3D printer, it makes it more cost effective, and then also reduces the time to fabricate and walk in a prosthetic leg substantially.
Do you think that's been the biggest technological advancement in prosthetics in the last 5 to 10 years that you've been working? And that's an assumption.
Yeah, I'd say so. There's been some big leaps over time, but I think 3D printing is definitely the bigger leap that the field has seen. And like I said, it's just now catching on. I think the potential for that is huge down the road too, and making it accessible to people that otherwise wouldn't be accessible to this technology. It, like I said, it reduces the cost. It's a more timely process, and it's super accurate. It's very, very accurate, opposed to the traditional method of fabricating a prosthetic leg.
How did you know that you wanted to serve people on the reservation? Did you always know you wanted to go back to, are you from the area? Is that the motivation?
Or? Yeah. When I got out of school, I mean, really, I would have went anywhere to work, and I was just fortunate enough to be able to move back to Flagstaff and raise my family. And it's a place I've always loved. And then it just took living in this community and working with the Native population and to realize what a need there is for this and how underserved the area is to really find that passion of, wow, this is something that could be done better and just focused on entirely.
Why do you think our Native populations are so underserved in this when it comes to prosthetics?
I'd say like the biggest challenge would be just the rural nature of the reservation. Like you touched on earlier, disproportionately there's a higher rate of diabetes, which is ultimately the main cause of an amputation. People often think of prosthetics as some trauma, like a motorcycle accident or the military soldiers. But really, the numbers are staggering. It's like 80% come from vascular, like diabetes. And the Native population just has a high rate of that. And then it's difficult. It's difficult to get a prosthetic leg, and the time investment and the multiple visits you need before you're up and walking. And for someone that lives 3-4 hours away from a town, that's really difficult, and they need transport, and it's just, nothing is very accessible and easy, and the odds are not in their favor. So there's multiple reasons.
So when did you start actually going on reservation and going to the people that need it so that they don't have to go and get transportation?
Yeah, it's been fairly recently. So I worked with a bigger kind of nationally known company, and their mindset was, you know, like, people will come to us if they want our services. And so when I branched out to start this company specifically, it was maybe, I don't know, 8 months ago. And that was the intention of, you know, I'm going to be a mobile clinic. Everything I need to do will be mobile, so I can do it from patients' home. So since I started Next Step Prosthetics, it's been about 8 months I've been going out there.
Awesome. And what can you tell us a story about a particularly memorable home visit?
Yeah, I actually often tell this story. So I had a patient that was referred to me up in Page, that lived kind of south of Page on the reservation. And I was working with him. I was going to his home. I was getting everything ready. And then he mentioned how he has a nephew who needs a prosthetic leg as well. And he's been trying to reach out and trying to find somewhere to go and doesn't know where to go. And the guy I was meeting with was just fortunate enough in that his doctor, his doctor and I had a relationship, and he referred him to me, and that worked really well. But with his nephew, he was actually amputated in Flagstaff, went to a rehab hospital in Flagstaff, and then was sent home. And at no point along the way was the referral ever made for, hey, you should go start the process again, a prosthetic leg. And once he got on the reservation, it was very little education, I suppose, of where to go, where to start. And so and the crazy thing is, too, is he was maybe 32 years old. He was a young, super motivated guy that needed a prosthetic leg and just didn't know where to go. And so it had been like a year and a half of him sitting in a wheelchair, not knowing where to get help.
Wow. And so how do you think there can be more education for people about access and about what's, you know, potentially offered to them to improve their life in this area?
Yeah. And so you mentioned in your show earlier that prosthetics are expensive, and they are, but if you're motivated and willing and you want a prosthetic leg and you want to walk, there's really no barriers. Like you can get it covered with your health insurance. But again, it's just to answer your question, the education, I don't know, going on radio shows hopefully helps. But yeah, and I would just ask your audience if they have any suggestions, any methods that they would recommend to get the word out. We've been going to all the healthcare facilities on the reservation and educating the doctors.
Well, Mike, we have to go to break right now, but we're going to hear more about how they can get access to it right after the break. And this is Native America Calling. Thanks for listening. Listening to Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. We are talking about access to prosthetic limbs, and if you use a prosthetic limb, how easy or difficult was it for you to see a specialist and access therapy to use the equipment properly? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Mike Kayser, a certified prosthetist and orthotist, and the owner of the clinic Next Step Prosthetics. Mike, I'd love for you to finish your thought from before the break. It was you were asking if the audience had any thoughts about how to increase education or access to clinics like yours. Do you want to finish your thought?
Yeah. So, like I said, it's definitely a challenge. It's a challenge to get that awareness out there, and kind of seems like something that's just going to come with word of mouth, and kind of been how things have progress so far. As you know, like I was saying earlier, I had a patient and he was like, hey, my nephew also needs prosthetic leg, and just that word of mouth. But it's definitely a challenge. And like I was saying, we've met with healthcare facilities and trying to educate people that might come across these patients. But yeah, if anyone has an idea, I'd love to hear it. So.
Yes, well, be sure to call in. Anyone in our audience is welcome to at 1-800-996-2848 or 1-800-99-NATIVE. So Mike, before the show, we were talking about the process, like what a person can expect. Can you share that with our audience? The process of getting a prosthetic?
Yeah, so you would, you know, be seen, be evaluated, made a temporary 3D printed prosthetic, and then after walking on it and assuring that it's comfortable, it's not hurting, it's everything's good, then we would fabricate it into a definitive, really durable, like carbon fiber prosthetic leg that you would then have for a long time. And often patients will need a new, it's called the socket, so it's the top part of the prosthetic that physically attaches to the residual limb. So as your limb shape changes and you have swelling or atrophying of your tissue, the socket, the top part, doesn't fit as well. So getting that reevaluated and refit and refabricated happens, you know, every 6 months, maybe every year. And then once you kind of have been at a steady state for a while, that prosthetic leg should fit you for a long time, 5-10 years. But at first you kind of fluctuate in your limb volume, so you'll get new sockets every now and then, and it's an ongoing process, and it's something that you have to be willing to invest the time in and dedicate to relearning how to walk and just the whole process. So if we can make that easier at any point by going to the patients and seeing them in their homes, then that's kind of our goal. But it's a process for sure.
So I had the misconception that people had multiple prosthetics depending on which activities that they would partake in. What's the reality of that?
Yeah, and you know, I had that same misconception before getting into this field, and that makes sense, and that would be a wonderful thing in an ideal world, that you'd have a leg for swimming or you'd have a leg for riding a bike. But the reality is that they are expensive. So to get a prosthetic leg that can do everything is kind of the goal. So the prosthetic leg you would get should accommodate whatever you're into. If you're into riding bikes or dirt bikes or hiking, you know, you'd get one prosthetic leg that can do all of it rather than individual specific legs, which still have their place. Like you can get a running specific leg with like the blades on them that you've probably seen in the Olympics. So with a leg like that, you couldn't walk around the grocery store necessarily with it, but it's designated for running. But again, they're hard to get payment for. So it's even more difficult to justify why you would need six different legs.
And can you share with our audience what you were talking about with the veterans and how they have different prosthetics and why they have more access maybe?
Exactly. And it's hard. I mean, absolutely, you should get what you need. And if you need a running leg, like it should be covered. And it's unfortunate that it's not that way. And it's, you know, cost is highly looked at, but and it just depends on the different payers. So the VA system typically is pretty good about, and they're probably one of the only payers that will give you multiple legs, such as like a leg for scuba diving or a leg for running, whereas Medicare and Medicaid and these other payers really want you to justify even why you need a leg in the first place, which is kind of crazy. But I also kind of understand that there's a lot of fraud in the medical field, but it's just the VA and the healthcare system there is one of the few that will allow multiple legs for one patient.
You mentioned blades for Special Olympics, and earlier in the show you were talking about how There's been advancements with creating prosthetics, such as for with 3D printing. So I'm curious about the prosthetics that are used for the Olympics, the Special Olympics in particular. Well, I guess that is where we would see them. Can you tell us about that at all?
Yeah. So again, it's instead of a prosthetic foot that would fit into a shoe, they just totally redesigned it to be this kind of like a spring, almost like a half J C shape kind of thing that you bounce on. And they're really efficient, and they work really well for running and sprinting and those sorts of things. And it's come a long ways, and that has come a long ways. And especially with just the advent of like social media and all these people that have gotten into these things. And you don't have to be an Olympic athlete to get one, or someone that's in the VA system. There's plenty of people just every day, you know, people throughout walks of life that have running blades. And as long as you have your designated leg for walking throughout the day and that's going fine, then we can work with you on getting a specialty leg. If the insurance isn't going to cover it, like, we're happy to help in any way we can. If that's printing another socket for you and getting donations, or various organizations that can help pay for these legs, it can be done. And there's several patients we have that do that as well. So it's not a hard no. It's not totally off the table.
That's good. So, but expanding from legs and feet, what about hands and arms? Can you talk about those prosthetics and how they're different, or how they help people, or how you help people in that if they don't have their hands and arms?
Yeah, and we will. We will do upper extremity, like hands and arms, but I mainly talk about lower extremity legs, just in that it's very rare to have a patient with a upper extremity prosthetic, and there's less ways to become a amputee with your upper extremities. And then also the technology is good, and I'm sure people have seen like some really cool kind of robotic looking hands that are battery powered, but even still, with the best technology we have for a prosthetic arm, it doesn't even come close to replicating what your anatomical hand can do. So oftentimes the patients just won't even bother getting a upper extremity prosthetic. So then that factors into it too. There's few patients that have an upper extremity amputation, and then there's even fewer that even want to hassle with it, because anything they can do with a prosthetic arm is so limited, they just might as well learn how to use their other hand. Whereas a prosthetic leg can actually replicate your anatomical leg very, very accurately.
Interesting. I had no idea that the science hadn't advanced far enough to allow us to emulate the usage of an actual hand. It sounds like there's been more investment made in figuring out how to help people to walk. So I guess that shows the priorities in this field, or even with priorities of, I guess, human mobility, right?
Yeah. And there's just, again, there's just way more lower extremity amputees than there are above knees. So there's, like you said, there's the focus on that, like getting that technology up to speed. But then, yeah, if you just think about all the things your hand is capable of doing, it's very challenging to replicate that in a non-biologic device. And it requires batteries, which are still really heavy, and you have to charge them, and they're finicky, and it's difficult. Whereas a prosthetic leg, it's a somewhat simpler problem to solve.
Sounds like for those entrepreneurs out there that there is an opportunity in some biotech in this, or at least in the area of trying to figure out how to emulate the human hand. We have a caller from Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening in on KUNM. We have Ruth. Hi, Ruth. Do you have a question, comment, recommendation?
Yeah. This is great. There's such a tremendous need out there on the reservation for sure. And with all Native Americans, I'm sure the rate of amputation is so high. I'm a physical therapist. I have about 30 years experience working with amputees, many of them from different Native tribes here in New Mexico. And I just wanted to recommend a source for people who are amputees, a resource. It's called Amputee Coalition. It's an international organization based here in the United States, but they have so many valuable resources available for amputees. They have a quarterly magazine that comes out, plus about 20 other different publications that are really helpful. They have a phone number and a website, and the website is full of resources. There are chat rooms. They'll pair you up with a peer that you can talk to or video chat with, whatever technology is available to you. I can give you the web address and their phone number, and it's just a wealth of information. And people should know also that in New Mexico, most of the prosthetists will go out to the reservation and see people in their homes if they can't get into a clinic. And one of the things that I've noticed in my practice is that a prosthesis is going to a prosthetist will make your prosthesis fit beautifully, and you leave the office, and then the next day it might not feel so good. And certainly a month or two later, if you're a new amputee, you're going to need to go back and have it revised. And people just think, oh, it doesn't fit anymore, or it hurts, and then they stop using it. So I would just urge people with everything I've got to follow up with their prosthetist. And if there's any problem with the prosthesis or the fit or the comfort, to call them and see, can you come out to my house? Can I get into a place where you could see me and make those adjustments so that the prosthesis feels comfortable and works properly?
So you're really asking people to advocate for themselves and make sure that they go and find the resources they need, because you're saying that the resources do exist.
That's right. That's right. And a prosthesis can work. I just have seen so many people put their prosthesis in the closet and say it's no longer comfortable instead of getting it fixed so they could use it. And prosthetists are really happy to do that. They're not going to charge you extra to do that. That's included in the price of the prosthesis. Usually it's follow-up visits, and whether that means the prosthetist is coming out to your house or you're going into a clinic.
Thank you, Ruth. This was really helpful. Can you actually mention that web address and number that you referenced for people?
Yeah, so it's called Amputee Coalition. You could Google it, but the web address is amputee-coalition.org. And the phone number is a toll-free number. It is 888-267-5669.
Thank you, Ruth. We appreciate you calling in. It was great information for our listeners.
A great show. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike, could you comment on why it's important to go to follow-up visits, or anything that, you know, sparked something in your mind when Ruth was speaking?
Yeah, she's absolutely right. The Amputee Coalition is by far the best resource online. And from there, they list all other kinds of resources to branch out from there. So definitely start there. I've noticed it's difficult for some of the patients to even have access to the internet. So they do have, like she was saying, a monthly newsletter you can sign up for and get this information sent to you. I've had a handful sent to myself that then I can give out to patients on the reservation. So it's not just, like she was saying, it's not just an online source. You can get a newsletter sent to you as well if all you have is mail. But and she's right too about the follow-up appointments being absolutely crucial. And I'm not sure if I was telling you this before the show or not, but it's not like a shoe where you would just go to a shoe store and you get your size. I'm a 10.5, I'm gonna put it on and it's gonna work. It's an ongoing process, and it takes lots of time, lots of tweaking, not only the fit of the leg but also the alignment. And as patients relearn how to walk, they have new needs and issues arise. So all my patients have my cell phone, and it's a constant, like, you need easy access to the person that can make these adjustments for you. And again, it's not, like she was saying, it doesn't come at any extra charge. The way this field kind of works is we bill for the device itself, the prosthetic leg. And if it takes 50 visits to get it comfortable, then it takes 50 visits. There's no copay. There's no fee for my service. So that's a very common part of this equation is just the follow-up care, like she was saying. And then too, if at all possible, to get physical therapy after you're fitting your prosthetic leg is really ideal, especially if you have therapists that will come out to your home, which I know there are some, specifically in Northern Arizona, that will go to the reservation.
Well, Mike, we're going to have to go to break again, but we'll talk with you more after the break. I've learned a lot in this segment and in the previous one, and I'm sure our audience has as well. If you have a comment or a question for today's show, call in at 1-800-996-2848, and you can also email us at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. You can also talk to us on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we can get your comments on the air. You can post a pic on Instagram at Native America Calling and tag me, Alyssa K. London. So if you have any questions about prosthetics, this is the show for you, and we want to hear from you. We have to take a break right now, but we'll be right back. I'm your host, Alyssa London.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you there are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States. You may choose which COVID-19 vaccine you receive as a booster shot. Getting the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa London. Today we're focusing on the topic of using prosthetic limbs, and there's still time to join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, on the line today, our guest is Mike Kaiser. He's a certified prosthetist, orthotist, and the owner and clinician of Next Step Prosthetics. Mike, I've learned so much from you about the field of prosthetics and why it's so important for people to understand that they have access to getting a prosthetic limb and that they can keep refitting it. Something that I would love for you to share with our audience is more about this project that you have taken up of designing Hopi-styled prosthetic limbs. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Again, in kind of an effort to focus on an area that's underserved, the bulk of the prosthetic designs that are out there are just traditional, like, I don't know, like a camouflage print or a black carbon fiber look. And there's nothing that was specific or unique to the culture of Northern Arizona. So I reached out to a local Hopi artist, Dwayne. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name because I'll butcher it, but he's great. He's an incredibly talented guy and super busy, sought after, but yet he took the time to collaborate on this project with me, which was just amazing. And he designed a prosthetic, like a outer covering design for the prosthetic leg that the hope is down the road we'll have several of these to offer, but at the moment, we have this one that it's like Hopi pottery design. And so if patients want, they can have that put on their limbs as well. So it's not just a generic looking prosthetic.
It's very beautiful here on the, if you Google Next Step Prosthetics brings prosthetic limbs and then Hopi. If you Google that, listeners, you can see the picture of Dwayne Koyowena and Mike Kaiser with the prosthetic with the Hopi design. I just want to read, though, a quote from Mr. Dwayne Koyowena that he said, the whole concept of that Mike was trying to help and aim at, I thought would be a really neat thing to customize a prosthetic with a Hopi design. If a Hopi individual who needed a prosthetic would be able to have those designs and represent themselves a little bit better on a more personal level, I thought that was a really neat concept. Koyoena said, because he designs apparel, people ask if it's okay for them to wear a Native design if they are non-Native. And he says, yes, he sees it as a way to continue sharing his culture. So, Mike, that's a great quote from Dwayne. It shows that he really wants to help, Native people feel more connected to their prosthetic, feel like it's more in alignment with their culture. But it's also great that he wants to share it with non-Native people, too. Do you have any thoughts on Dwayne's quote?
Yeah, I think Dwayne does that very well, in that he is a younger artist and very more modern contemporary, and kind of bridges that gap between the old traditional styles and bringing it to the attention of the newer generation, and then also just bringing it to everyone's attention outside of his culture. I mean, he has pictures of the Aquaman guy wearing his t-shirts, and like, he's just a very prolific artist that is excited to share his culture with everybody. And so he's just been a great guy.
That's awesome. Well, if you get Aquaman to wear your art, then really you've made it when Jason Momoa reps your designs. Thank you, Mike. I want to also bring into the conversation from Wapato, Washington, Alicia Guerrero. She's a student athlete at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she is Talua Dene Nation. And welcome to Native America Calling, Alicia.
Hello.
Hello. So you're an athlete and you use a prosthetic leg. What was the process like for you to get a prosthetic and get fitted for the first time?
So for me, I became an amputee when I was 2 years old. I lost my leg in an accident. So from what my mom has told me was I was pretty determined to try walking. So immediately I was already sent to a prescription to get my leg, and I was pretty fitted. I was fitted pretty quickly.
So determination. Well, I guess I'm just, since you were two, so an accident took place. So you've lived your entire life with a prosthetic leg, essentially.
Yes, it's been over 16 years now.
Given that you're an athlete, and it sounds like a really good one, what's it been like being an athlete with a prosthetic leg?
It's been pretty interesting because prior to becoming a college athlete, and then prior to playing sports in high school, my prosthetics were pretty low tech, so I was constantly breaking them when I was playing regular basketball or trying to do volleyball. And eventually I was able to get more nicer quality stuff, more able to sustain my athletic ability, and it became a bit easier for me to like run around, be jumping properly, that kind of stuff.
So as you grew, how did it affect the way your prosthetic leg fit? Did you need to get a different socket periodically, or what was the process for your prosthetic leg to grow with you as you grew up?
So about every 1 to 2 years, I would get a brand new socket typically, and sometimes I would have to get a whole new like carbon fiber fit with it. I would have to typically get a whole new like setup for the leg depending on how much I grew, or I had constant surgeries because of my amputation. My leg was a weird shape compared to a typical amputee, so a lot of changes.
What's your mindset around all of this? Because growing up with having to do multiple surgeries and having to continue to get a new prosthetic, I mean, it just shows that you're that you have a lot of mental fortitude and that you are so determined. So can you share with us how you think about this aspect of your life?
Yeah, my thing is I really enjoy being able to be active no matter what. So that was kind of like my backbone for the instance, because like, it was pretty difficult having to be in like a in a room with my prosthetist for hours if my leg wasn't fitting properly or it was causing me pain, and I'd have to be there out for hours constantly making sure. Okay, he tried to make a revision on the socket, but it's still not fitting properly. Let's try this instead. It was frustrating at times, but it was well worth it when I was able to walk out of the office and be able to go do what I wanted to do.
So your mentality is you just got to do what you got to do in order to keep your eye on the prize of staying active and staying connected to your sports.
Exactly.
Nice. Oh, okay. Barriers, though, that you and your family face getting new legs so often in the beginning. Any barriers that you had to overcome?
So one of my biggest ones was when I first lost my leg, I was flown to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle, Washington, and they ended up referring us out to Shriners Hospital in Portland, Oregon. And where I live in Wapato, it's about over 4 hours away. So whenever I needed a new prosthetic or had issues for the first few years of my amputation, we had to drive all the way to Portland in order to get whatever help I needed.
So you weren't lucky enough to have someone like Mike drive onto the reservation to help you. You had to get the transportation yourself?
Yeah, sadly, but eventually my mom was able to find a place in Yakima, Washington, which is about 10 minutes away, 10 minutes off the reservation. And thankfully, there was someone there who was willing to help me out. And my father, I was grateful he had a good job, so he was able to support me with my prosthetic needs.
That is very fortunate. Other fortunes in your life are, of course, your sports and athleticism. I asked Mike a little bit about this earlier in the show, about whether people have different prosthetic legs. But for you, in actuality, as someone who, you know, plays sports, is an amputee, do you actually have different prosthetic legs or are different sports you're involved in?
I do.
Okay.
I do. So it's my day leg, my everyday leg. And I use it to walk around and everything. This leg, I typically can lift weights in. I can do shot put and discus. Those are my two main events for track and field. And when I did do running in high school, I was a 100-meter sprinter, and I actually had one of those fancy carbon fiber running blades that I was able to use.
Nice. So I imagine technology has improved since you got your first prosthetic, and how can you tell us about the improvement over the years leading to what you have now?
Yes. So how my first prosthetic leg was, it was pretty simple, just a socket attached to a foot. And the way to keep the leg on was I used multiple socks and pads that would push into certain spots of my leg in order to keep the prosthetic on. But 2-year-old me did not enjoy that whatsoever, so I would rip the pads out and my leg would just magically stay on. Even to this day, I do not know how my leg stayed on. But
your determination.
Yeah, honestly, 2-year-old determination kept that leg on. A couple times I'd be on the swing, though, and it'd fly off, but yeah.
You probably wanted to keep up with your brothers or your cousins, right?
Absolutely.
Do you ever talk to other people who like struggle with the reality of having a prosthetic? And if so, what do you tell them?
I've talked to a few, and it kind of just depends on the person, because I've talked to people who had that same determination I had when I was pretty young to get back to walking. And I always try to encourage anyone, but sometimes it's a little bit trickier for people and they need a bit more time. So just showing them resources like Amputee Coalition, or if they are interested in sports, there's a plethora of sports that are available to any amputee. So it just kind of all depends. I typically tell them just try whatever you need to. If you ever need a support system. I have a few people I can reach out to help out.
What are some of those sports that you told or you would tell people that are available to amputees?
So there's a lot in the Paralympics. So the Paralympics is, there's like winter and summer, just like the regular Olympics and also Special Olympics, but the Paralympics is open to anyone. There, in the Paralympics, I participate in track and field. So I have not made a team yet, but I hope to, but I do shot put and discus. On the other side of the para-athletic world, I also participate in wheelchair basketball at the University of Illinois. I'm one of the athletes there. So those are like two of the sports you can participate in.
Amazing. We got to get you as an ambassador for Nike N7. That just keeps what's coming to mind.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're inspiring. We have a caller, Susan from Bethel, Alaska, listening in on KYUK. Susan, what is your question?
People lose a good part of their feet. Prosthetic situation I've seen offered to them is these big bulky boot-like deals. I know people that just have gotten, so they just put on, in the summer and spring, just put on regular shoes and run around with the shoes. But because they have partial feet, the shoes kind of, it's hard on the shoes. They flatten and curve upwards and all that. And I was wondering if there was a prosthetic device or something that fits internally inside shoes for people that have lost part of their feet to frostbite. And that was my question. I'll hang up and hear for the answer.
Oh, thank you, Susan. Mike, I think I'm going to hand that to you. Any solution that you can provide to Susan? And we're nearing the end of our show, so short and sweet if possible.
There actually is. So I think she's talking about, imagine if all your toes were gone from like the balls of your feet. When you go to step, it would bend your tip of your shoe up because there'd be nothing there to counter it. So they make a carbon foot plate that makes the bottom of your shoe really stiff, and then like a foam filler inside your shoe. But if she reached out to any, you know, prosthetist, that they would know exactly what to do.
Awesome. Thank you for that information. And then to close out our show, Alicia, could you share something that you would like people to know about living with a prosthetic that might be a misunderstanding or a misconception?
I guess my thing to say is don't underestimate anyone with a disability, because we're all living, breathing humans just like everyone else. We're very much capable of doing whatever we set our minds to.
Thank you. And if they want to follow your sports journey, is there any way they can follow you?
Yes, you can follow me at aguerrero30 on Instagram. That's my main account I usually use for that.
Thank you. And Mike, any way we can follow your work?
Yeah, my website is Next Step Prosthetics. So it's actually nextsteppx.com. And you guys are welcome to call my cell phone, 928-255-8665.
That is generous of you. Well, let's stick with his website for now. And thank you to both our guests. We have reached the end of the hour. And I'd like to say thank you to our guests, Mike Kaiser and Alicia Guerrero. Join us tomorrow for a discussion on solar sovereignty. I'm your host, Alyssa London. And this has been an episode of Native America Calling.
I feel happier when my children and grandchildren spend time with me or someone comes to visit. We also need to stay active to keep our spirits alive. As elders, our teachings are needed more than ever. The more we're socially connected with family and community, the less health problems we'll have, the longer we'll live. Remember, you're not alone. Connected together, we'll stand strong. More on elder isolation and caregiver resources at connectedindigenouselders.org. The National Indian Council on Aging supports this show.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.